Welcome to Cat Soup.
Ta-da!
I'm Cat.
I'm Joe.
And together we are
Cat Soup.
Today, we're going to talk about the weather.
The weather?
Yeah, because everybody talks about it, but nobody does anything about it.
That's so boring.
I know, but we're going to do something better than talk about it.
We're going to go play in the rain?
No, we're going to read about it.
I thought you said we're going to have fun.
We are.
Reading is fundamental.
Reading is fundamental. Wait till you see all this great stuff I found. No, I found great stuff. Great stuff.
And then we can go play in the rain.
And we can play in the rain if you want, yeah.
Yeah,
That would be fine. Have you ever wondered where the phrase came, it's raining cats and dogs?
No?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. This is radio, they can't see you shaking your head.
That was meant to get you to laugh.
Okay, that's also why I don't wear makeup while I'm doing this. Because I have a face for radio. Had to slip that in there. Anyway, this is from www.phrases.org.uk.
You like those British sites, don't
I do
you?
Like those British sites, yes, they do.
Excellent.
But there are several interesting hypotheses. Yes, the first one is, one supposed origin is that the phrase raining cats and dogs derives from mythology. Dogs were wolves, and they were attendants to Odin, the god of storms, and sailors associated them with rain. Witches, who often took the form of their familiars, cats,
meow,
are supposed to have ridden the wind. Some evidence would be nice, but there doesn't appear to be any to support this notion.
It has also been suggested that cats and dogs were washed from roofs during the heavy weather. This is a widely repeated tale. It got a new lease on life with an email message late in the 1500s, which began circulating on the internet in 1999.
Which means it's still circulating.
Circulating.
Yeah.
Going around and around and around and
getting
around.
Getting forwarded to people. Yeah.
Little goose does.
Anyway, why don't you read us part of that little email?
I'll describe their houses a little. You heard of the thatch roof. Well, that's where...
Oh, no. These were roofs in England.
I described the houses a little. You've heard of thatch roofs. Well, that's all they were. Thick straw piled high with no wood underneath. They were the only place for the little animals to get warm. So all the pets, dogs and cats and other small animals, rice, mites...
Mites, bed bugs.
Right. There's a song in there. All lived in the roof. When it rained, it became slippery, so sometimes the animals would slip and fall off the roof. Thus the saying, it's raining cats and dogs.
This is nonsense. It hardly needs debunking. But, lest there be any doubt, let's do that anyway. In order to believe this tale, we would have to accept that dogs lived in thatched roofs, which, of course, they didn't. No, don't go there, Joe. Even accepting that bizarre idea, for dogs to have slipped off when it rained, they would have needed to be sitting on the outside of the thatch, hardly the place an animal would head for shelter in bad weather. Yeah, okay. Another suggestion.
Now you understand when the dog falls on you from the roof, what happened?
Right. That's only raining dogs, then. But if you step in a poodle, you'll know that it rained dogs.
Oh, no, we're not going down there.
Yes, we just did.
Ouch.
Yes, we just did. Another suggestion that it's raining cats and dogs comes from the French version of the word catadope. Catadope.
You almost said cantaloupe.
Catadope. I took 11 years of French in school. You think I should pronounce that? Catadope.
Catadope.
Which means waterfall. Again, there's no evidence. If the phrase were just raining cats, or even if there also existed a French word dogadope,
ta-da.
We might be going somewhere with this one, but there isn't, so let's pass this by.
There's a similar phrase oriented from the north of England, raining star rods. No one has gone to the effort of speculating this is from mythic reports of stairs being carried into the air in storms and falling on gullible peasants.
Not the smart peasants, the gullible peasants.
Well, of course, anytime you see something coming down at you from the air, you just stand there and watch.
Okay.
It's fun.
Gullible by default.
Told you the 60s were not good for us. It's just a rather expensive phrase giving a graphic impression of a heavy rain, as in raining cats and dogs.
The much more probable source of raining cats and dogs is the prosaic fact that in the filthy streets of 17th, 18th century England, heavy rain would occasionally carry along dead animals and other debris.
I'm not dead yet.
And the animals didn't fall. I haven't found... Well, never mind.
Just mostly dead.
Mostly dead. The animals didn't fall from the sky, but the sight of dead cats and dogs floating by in storm sewers could well have caused the coining of this colorful phrase, raining cats and dogs.
Time for soup.
Jonathan Swift described such an event. That's not what we meant by cat soup, I promise. Cats floating in soup. No.
And you've already broken another promise.
That I wasn't going to describe what cat soup meant?
No, that we were going to have cat soup.
Oh, no, we're not having cat soup. Anyway, Jonathan Swift described such an event in his satirical poem, A Description of a City Shower, first published in the 1710 collection of the Tatler magazine. I always get the Tatler. That's one of my subscriptions.
Three pence and a...
Yeah. Mm. The poem was a denunciation of contemporary London society, and its meaning has been much debated. While the poem is metaphorical and doesn't describe a specific flood, it seems that in describing waterborne animal corpses, Swift was referring to an occurrence that his readers would have been well familiar with.
Now, in continuous drops, the flood comes down, threatening with deluge this devoted town. Now from all parts the swelling kennel flows, and bear their trophy with them as they go. Filth of all hues and odors seem to tell what street they sailed from by their sight and their smell. They, as each torrent drives with rapid force, from Smith Mill to St. Poulter's shape their course, and in huge confluent joined by Snow Hill Ridge, fall from the conduit prone to Holborn Bridge. Sweeping from the butcher stalls, dung, guts, and blood, drowned pumpies, stinking swats all drenched in mud, dead cats, and turnip tops come tumbling down the flood.
Ew. Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Or, ooh.
Or, ooh.
No. The other one that I like, the other saying that I like, is right as rain. My grandma used to say that. Well, that's just as right as rain.
Now, how can right as rain, how can rain be right?
Well, let me explain that to you.
Aye.
From wiki.answers.com. Right as rain might be expressed as straight as rain, or straight as rain falls, or to move in a straight line. The metaphor plays on resonance between geometric straightness and correctness of judgment. And then from worldwidewords.org.
Five times fast, please.
Yes. Perhaps surprisingly, there have been expressions starting right as, since medieval times. Always in the sense of something being satisfactory, safe, secure, or comfortable. An early example quoted in a proverb as long ago as 1546 is right as a line. In that, right might have had a literal sense of straightness, something desirable as in a line, but it also clearly has a figurative sense of being correct or acceptable. There's even an older example from the Romance of the Rose in 1400. Right as an adamant.
Adamant?
I don't know what that... Adamant?
What's an adamant?
I don't know. Adam and the Ants was real popular when I was in college.
But I didn't realize Adams ate mint.
Adamant. That was a mint that you give your aunt if he has bed bugs?
Exactly.
What about your uncle?
It's not an uncle issue. It's an aunt issue.
Okay. An adamant was a lodestone or magnet. Always read the next sentence before you let Joe make a joke. Yeah. There's other ones, though. Why don't you read about these?
Lots of others have followed in the century since. There's Right as a Gun, which appeared in one of John Fletcher's plays, Prophecies, in 1662. See?
1622.
The medicine hasn't kicked in yet.
Not yet.
Right as My Leg is also from the 17th century in the Sir Thomas Urquhart's translation of Gargantua and
Pantagruel.
Pantagruel.
By Rabulas. That was published in 1664.
Some were young, quaint, clever, neat, pretty, juicy, tight, brisk, buxom, proper, kind-hearted, and as right as my leg to any man's thinking.
Right. There's also right as a trivet from the 19th century. A trivet being a stand for a pot or kettle placed over an open fire. And this can be found in Charles Dickens' Pickwick Papers of 1837. I hope you are well, sir. Right as a trivet, sir, replied Bob Sawyer. About the same time, or a little later, people were saying things that were right as a ninepence, or right as a book, right as nails, or as right as the bank.
Right as rain is a late coming to the illustrious collection of curious similes. It makes no more sense that the variance it has absurd and is clearly just a play on words, though perhaps there's a lurking idea that rain often comes down straight in a right line, to use the old sense. But the alteration was undoubtedly why it was created and has helped it survive.
So there. See, when I tell you to straighten up and be right as rain, now you'll know what I mean.
That means when I lay down and be prone sideways.
Yeah. Never mind.
Never mind.
From our top five lists.
Ta-da!
That we write for top five. Top5.com, if you ever want to kill some time, you can go there. Do you know they've just revamped their site?
They revamped the site?
Yes.
Why would they revamp the site?
Because they didn't have enough vamps before.
Love it when you added more vamps.
Yes, we like vamps. Anyway.
How vampish is that?
You know what the top nine signs are that you've gotten enough rain?
I thought we were on the top five list.
Yeah, but it's top5.com, but it's top nine. I don't know.
Because
it rhymes, top five live. We're doing top five live.
So we'll start at number nine.
We're starting at number nine.
I love it.
The top nine signs you've gotten enough rain. Number nine, Al Gore's latest issue, Global Squishing.
Number eight, local birds are wearing snorkels.
Number seven, FEMA calls you to ask about the weather.
Number six, well, something's not staying mainly on the plane in Spain.
Number five, Katrina Schmatrina, try living through some real water, you pansies.
Number four, the site of the campsite entrance says that smoke rates the current danger of level of forest fires as, you must be joking.
Number three, Royal Caribbean offers a new luxury cruise package that includes Sioux City, Cedar Rapids, and Des Moines.
Number two, the newspaper delivery guy doesn't even have to bother aiming for the puddles.
And the number one sign you've gotten enough rain?
You drove your Chevy to the levee, and the levee was gone.
Don't you want to be a weatherman?
No.
Weather person? No? Oh, I think that would be great.
How
Dick Goddard, my goodness. Dick Goddard has been on the weather for what, like 352 years?
But my question is, how can you be so loved?
And so wrong?
And so wrong so much of the time.
Well, because we'll explain that later on. We have a story about that. But first, you know, Dick Goddard's getting kind of old, but, you know, he really holds it together for a guy in his 80s.
He does. He's always been enjoyable to watch, I must admit.
But someday.
Someday.
Someday. It's all going to come.
Someday.
Tumbling down. Here's the top 11 signs that your TV weather person is losing it.
From top5.com. Number 11. He replaces a 3D Doppler radar with 3D virtual Valerie.
We'll just move on from there. Number 10, she announces today's forecast crap, but the Canary Islands have great weather in the spring, so let's go to that map.
Oh, number 9. He begins the weather forecast with, well, this cold front will be moving right along as soon as my ex-wife leaves town.
His standard weather map is replaced by a risk board with fighter planes and tanks, and he spends the entire segment making explosion and machine gun noises.
Number 7. He laughs as he says, I predict a giant fire right here on my mother-in-law's condo.
Oh, that's nasty.
Ouch.
Yeah, my weather person's losing it when she illustrates a forthcoming snowstorm by shaking her dandruff over the East Coast.
Now that's a snowfall. Number 5. He prefaces all reports with, and in another vengeful act from God.
The current weather report consists of, look out, stupid window, you lazy idiots. I didn't do that right. Let me do that again. The current weather report consists of, look out the stupid window, you lazy idiots.
It's amazing where the comma goes, how it delineates between the good and the bad.
Yes, it does. What's the number 3 reason?
Number 3, she keeps hurling lightning bolts at the rest of the news team.
Number 2, it looks like he's had a brief downpour in his pants again.
No. And the number one sign your TV weather person is losing it.
The live weather cam is really just video highlights of his recent colonoscopy.
Ew.
Okay. Let's lighten that up a little bit. I love these. We're going to do these real fast. These are the top 24 movies aired on the Weather Channel.
From top5.com.
First one is Gone with the Gale Force Winds.
Number 23, Well, It Was Sleeting.
West Side Stormy.
You've Got Hail.
Nor by Nor'easter.
Finding El Nemo.
Nino.
Nino.
Nino. Nino. Like
I'm
Joe
English.
Nino.
Not Spanish.
Anyway, singing in the 70% chance of rain.
Goodbye, cumulonimbus.
Beavis and Roker do America.
Some like it hot and humid with high around 90, cooling to 73 overnight, followed by increasing clouds tomorrow high in 84.
Where the wild guesses are.
Rain, man.
Looking for Mr. Isobar.
Monty Python and the growing hail.
The fantastic forecast.
The sun also rises at 7:13 a.m.
Clear and pleasant day, sir.
All quiet on the Occulated front.
Definitely, maybe, heck, your guess is as good as ours.
Number 5, there will be a flood.
Harry Doppler and the Sorcerer's Hailstone.
To Tsunami Dearest.
And Typhoon Struck. And the number 1 movie aired on the Weather Channel is...
Dun, 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 The Blizzard of Oz.
Oh, I love that one. Hey. Love that one. Great.
I'll get you, my pretty.
Uh-huh.
And your little dog, too.
Here we've got some interesting dumb criminal news. You've heard the stories about the dumb criminals where the police track them because they've decided to rob a house when it's snowing and they've left their footprints in the snow.
I know them well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's another one that's a little bit different, and this is from dumbcriminals.com. According to NBC 15 in Mississippi, police broke up a meth lab after one of the residents called 911 while he was trying to dial 411.
How do you mistake 911 for 411?
It's only one number away.
But a 4 doesn't even look like a 9.
If you had the phone turned upside down, you were blindfolded and had one of your eyes poked out, you could still dial 411.
Which is stupid because you should be calling 911 since one of your freaking eyes has been poked out.
Well, police didn't get a response to the call, so they sent officers to the scene where they found the meth lab. Had they found a poet laureate or a Catcher in the Rye discussion group, I would have been even more surprised and maybe a little hopeful in humanity. But, according to the story, the man who made the phone call was trying to get a hold of FEMA because they still haven't sent him a new trailer after Hurricane Katrina.
And there you have it, folks.
Yes. Here's some fun, dumb headlines. And this is actually from FedTrack.com. Dumb headlines. I love these. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do headlines. That was my theme music.
Oh, we need to have that in the background.
Yeah. Do, 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 do,
do, do, do, do, man struck by lightning faces battery charge.
Ski areas closed due to snow.
Cold wave linked to temperatures.
Official, only rain will cure drought.
Storm delayed by bad weather.
Yeah.
Those aren't dumb headlines.
That's pretty dumb. I've got something here that will... be interesting if Dave lets us actually air this. I'm not sure. The Weather Channel, this is from cracked.com. That's a great website. You got to check it. This is from 2009, but it's still really interesting. The Weather Channel. The phrase brings to mind thoughts of planning your weekend, flipping through en route to, according to Jim, maybe even watching a hurricane tear up your lawn. But there's a dark side to the Weather Channel.
Oh.
A world of sexual harassment, verbal abuse, and corporate cover-ups. Yes, the unthinkable has happened. The Weather Channel is interesting.
The man who made it so interesting? Bob Stokes. Their lead anchor. Sorry, Bob, but you're still just a weatherman. After running his original co-anchor off with physical and verbal abuse and not getting fired for it, he realized he was so valuable to the Weather Channel that he could get away with basically anything. What made his bland face and generic way of speaking so darn valuable? Well, we'll never know. But the fact is, the new co-anchor, Hillary Andrews, was forced to put up with 3 years of sexual harassment and petty sabotage, during which her superiors refused to act and ultimately laid her off. That Bob Stroke must be some draw. And all this in the midst of a $5 billion bidding war for the sale of the channel. Hey, the Weather Channel, when did you become a soap opera? Probably about time these pages from Andrew's disposition hit the internet. Prepare yourself, readers. You're about to enter the seedy cloak and dagger world of national weather reportage. Excerpts from the disposition of Hillary Andrews.
And I've never met Hillary, but I think she's probably a Southern Belle, I would think. I don't know, but we're going to try to read them like that. Mr. Stokes repeatedly made crude sexual comments to me in the guise of discussing the weather, including, tonight looks unusually hot, and I'm sensing a high pressure system forming in the deep south. While I was reporting, Mr. Stokes routinely placed the map of the U.S. on the studio green screen with nude photos of himself flexing. During the March 9th, 2006 broadcast of our national weather roundup, Mr. Stokes never once took his eyes from my breasts. Mr. Stokes described my unwillingness to have sex with him to a producer by saying, "She's got a high dew point." That's D-O, not...
D-O.
Yeah. By setting me up with an assignment which later proved to be fabricated, Mr. Stokes convinced me to suck on a barometer and has since kept the footage playing on a loop in his dressing room. Okay, that's not funny. During our time covering Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, Mr. Stokes repeatedly tried to start an impromptu Mardi Gras t-shirt contest with me as its sole entrant. On several occasions, he pretended to help bail out the flooded home of a resident only so he could accidentally spill buckets of water onto me. When he succeeded, he invariably made a reference to his levee being about to break and ran to the restroom. There's one more here. Whenever I try to enter the studio through the hallway leading from the dressing rooms, Mr. Stokes always stands in my way, pressing himself against me and says, "Warm front, got it? Warm front. Yeah. Harrowing.
We can only hope this monstrous abuse has finally brought to light and that the Weather Channel is replaced with something more wholesome and worthwhile, like Foxy Boxing.
I don't know what that is. Jello wrestling is what I remember, but that's okay. Did you know that the most statistically full of baloney professions from crack.com, number six is stock market experts, number five is wine tasters, art critics, criminal profilers, weather forecast made it number two, just above sports writing.
Well, it's been a long-running joke that TV weather forecasters are hired for their good looks and or entertainment value. We assume that someone in the back room is feeding them accurate information so they can at least read the weather. A bored and curious gentleman in Kansas City with the penchant for statistical analysts decided to explore this assumption one day. He tracked the prediction of four local stations over 220 days and found that the four stations had about an 85% success rate.
Sex rate?
Your last story still has me going here. Success rate in predicting if it would rain the next day, which looks pretty good at first glance.
But here's the thing. It doesn't rain on most days. It's not 50-50. So in most parts of the country, it only rains on about 14% of the days. So suppose you went on the air and just predicted every single day that it won't rain. In this 220-day study, the four TV stations went through. You'd beat their average accuracy rate because since your "it won't rain" prediction is right 86.3% of the time. Two out of the four stations barely beat you. They got 87%, while the other two fell below the threshold. With all that said, the guy's conclusion isn't that meteorology is untrustworthy, but rather that local TV weather forecasting places too much emphasis on good hair and terrible jokes, and not enough on smaller details, such as when it's going to rain.
I predict it's not going to rain tomorrow.
Okay. Sometime. It's Ohio.
Oh, it will rain tomorrow.
And then it won't rain tomorrow.
And then it will rain.
And then it might snow.
And then the orange barrels pop up.
Yeah. You can have all four seasons in one day in Ohio.
You gotta love it.
And we stay here.
Woohoo!
We do stay here. No, that's Yooha.
From Yooha.com.
And it's Yooha.com.
Yooha.
How hot was it yesterday?
It was so hot. At the picnic, we had to drink the potato salad. You could poach an egg in my armpit.
It was so hot. How hot was it?
I saw two trees fighting over a dog.
It was so hot.
I saw a chicken lay a fried egg.
It was so hot.
Farmers were feeding their chickens crushed ice to keep them from laying hard-boiled eggs.
It was so hot.
I saw a funeral procession pull into Dairy Queen.
It was so hot.
I saw an Amish guy buying an air conditioner.
It was so hot.
Birds were using potholders to pull worms out of the ground.
Cows were given evaporated milk.
It was so hot.
I roasted marshmallows on my belly.
It was so hot.
Hot water now comes from both of my taps.
It was so hot.
It's like living in the French fry bin at McDonald's.
It was so hot.
Cavs fans took the bags off their heads.
That's hot.
That's really hot.
That's hot.
We have a special guest. Joe, it's you, but we have a special guest. This is Cactus Jack, and I'm not sure where Cactus Jack is from. Someplace, I suppose, where there are cacti. Cactuses?
By cracky, what are you doing bringing me into this old filthy place?
Well, I heard you got some good sayings.
Oh, I got lots of sayings.
Well, I know, but let's keep them to the weather.
But you people don't listen to me, so what good is it used to talking about?
Well, we heard that it was really hot yesterday.
It's hot.
How hot was it?
Two goats and a pepper patch? A snake's butt and a ragged wick?
It's hotter than...
A long-armed politician in a room full of pockets.
It's hotter than...
Hell's waiting room.
It's hotter than a $2 pistol.
That's my line.
Oh, whoops. I like that one.
Now, a June bride in a feather bed?
It's hotter than...
Two mice in a wool sock.
It's hotter than...
My mule skinner's armpit.
Ew. It's hotter than...
The Death Valley Bakery.
It's hotter than...
A hot hombre. No, not a hot hombre. It's a fat hombre in a wool sweater in the Turlingo Chili Cook-Off.
It's hotter than...
A roofer in a wetsuit.
And it's hotter than...
Menopause in July.
Okay, there is nothing funny about that. Absolutely nothing.
Depends on what side of the fence you're looking at.
Yeah, well, this side of the fence, it's not funny.
Well, this side of the fence, we just cracking up laughing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Fine.
Yeah.
That's nice. We have some ruminations.
Ruminations?
From ruminate.com.
And ruminations mean?
Ruminations means things that you mull over in your head.
Oh, that's right. We talked about this last time.
Or time before. Or time before that.
Or some other time.
Every time, Joe, you ask me what it means.
Well,
buy a dictionary, please.
The 60s were good to me.
Yes, they were. Anyway, you know, we've got some here that come up to, that have to do with songs. There are lots of songs about the weather.
Aye.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Why don't you hit that one for me? Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
And frankly, the money to be had by blackmailing the agricultural and tourism industry outweighs my gut-level revulsion at having a weather-controlling freakazoid girlfriend.
That's by Larry Hollister. John Gephardt writes, "Why is it that everyone stocks up on milk, eggs, and bread before a big storm? When the blizzard hits, I don't think my top activity will be making boatloads of French toast."
Tidewater Joe says, "On stormy days, I like to snuggle with my girlfriend on the bearskin rug by the fireplace with a bottle of really expensive sherry. Oh. But only if my neighbor's out of town for the weekend, because he's kind of touchy about his stuff."
Is he referring to the girl skin, the bearskin rug, or the sherry?
Shall we not go down this path?
Okay. Do you remember the Carpenter song?
The Carpenter song?
Yeah.
Rainy days and Mondays.
Yes, rainy days and Mondays always get me down. And if it's a rainy Monday, you'd be well advised to keep the small talk to a minimum when you purchase stamps from me. I guess that's from a postal worker or Mark Sabian, whoever.
As long as he doesn't have his gun out.
Oh, here's one. Here's an old Beatles song. You should remember this. Fixing a hole where the rain gets in.
And it stops my mind from wondering.
Seems a little risky to do it myself.
But with no insurance, I can't really afford a skull specialist.
Thank you, Larry Hall.
Ta-da.
Oh, my goodness. Do we have a quick Irish blessing?
I think it's time for our Irish blessing of the day.
Do we? We have an Irish blessing. Yes, we do. A twisted Irish blessing.
Twist.
As you slide down the banister of life, may the splinter... That was a southern bell. That was a southern area of Ireland. As you slide down the banister of life, may the splinters never point the wrong way.
Ow.
And this has been Kat.
And this is Joe.
For Kat Soup.
Have a great weekend.